Welcome, Sean.
Thank you. It's always difficult to compete with Mars, but thank you for coming to this talk. My name is Sean Sally. I'm with the USDA ARS Rangeland Research Unit in Las Cruces, New Mexico, and with my colleagues from NRCS, we put together this paper for a special issue of Rangelands, which is the periodical of the Society for Range Management. And we were talking about resource hierarchy, which is the hierarchical landscape classification, which is both a conceptual and a spatially discrete unit for the agency, and it includes soil pedons, soil maps, all the way up to biomes. And I put in this figure after the Brady lecture, where if any of you attended that, there is the whole book of the different soil books. The book that I started was the 13th edition, but this is a figure that gets a lot of mileage when you're talking about hierarchical relationships amongst scales. The land resource hierarchy of NRCS is used to stratify programs, practices, and interpretations for the agency. It scales from land resource regions at the very core scale all the way down to the point and pedon. And across these scales, there's been soil orders, if you're familiar with different soil maps. The most typical one is the Sergo product, the detailed soil map. But it has both map scale and conceptual models that inform this hierarchy. We have a guiding policy with the Soil Survey Handbook as how these resource areas are used. At the broad scale for agricultural issues and decisions and organizing conservation practices, all the way down to organizing soil survey projects. So it's very integrated with the agency. It compares favorably to other landscape classifications, if you're familiar with the EPA ecoregions or the ecological units of the Forest Service. And you're able to compare these different scales in the hierarchy based upon the scale. For example, the detailed soil maps at 1 to 24,000 corresponds favorably with the land type or phase of the ecological units. Similar to the major land resource areas of the NRCS with sections in the Forest Service and level 3 ecoregions with the EPA product. Here's an outline of my talk. I just gave some of the background with the land resource hierarchy. I'm going to talk about some of the landscape ecology theories of how you scale these classifications, in particular concepts of top-down controls versus bottom-up testing. I'm going to talk about the background of major land resource areas and the history that it has with the Soil Science Society of America. I'm going to give some examples of some historic soil maps and how they've been based on certain properties, and then I'm going to present a general model of the relationships between these predictor variables and the scales of the land resource hierarchy. If you go back to some of these concepts, what defines them is the Agricultural Handbook 296, which is a USDA publication. It's been updated from its original publication in 65 in 1981, 1997 with the advent of GIS, and then more recently in 2006. And the way that it's worded, these upper tiers of the hierarchy are aggregations of soils. So the land resource units are aggregated of the StatsGo product, or the state's geographic database. And then the MLRA product is an aggregation of the LRU, and so on up the hierarchy. The problem with this, where you have bottom-up aggregation, you don't have context, or you don't realize the interaction with your neighboring resource areas. So the landscape ecology theory, which has been pretty well established within the discipline, is within a focal level, you have these contexts, which provides boundary conditions and allows you to understand the interactions of adjacent sites. But then you also have the specificity, which is the mechanisms, components, and initiating conditions for that focal level. And because there's nonlinear dynamics that typically go across scales, typically when you're looking at a particular area of interest, you have to only look at sort of this plus one and minus one scale. This is the example that we like to use when you're doing a soil map. One of the first steps is to go out and create a general soils map to understand the landscape. And then as you dig soil pits or transects across these units to develop your general soil map. That's how it's tested. So essentially the general soil map is a hypothesis, but it's tested through looking at individual soils. And this is similar across the different scales in the hierarchy. So I want to talk now about major land resource areas. It has a unique history with the Soil Science Society of America. In the mid-30s, there was a joint symposium with the Soil Conservation Service where they tried to tackle the erosion of the mid-30s, particularly the Dust Bowl area. And they created this provisional map that looked at problem areas in soil conservation research. And it was based on a factorial approach with present erosion, susceptibility to further erosion, moisture retention, topography, climate, soil, very similar to the CLORP philosophies that how you identify soil resources. And zooming in to the legend, areas with serious conservation problems such as the Southern High Plains were identified versus more moderate conservation problems like the Edwards Plateau. This is the historical product that gave rise to the MLRA, which is the Ag Handbook 296 product. The different colors are the land resource regions, and the individual units outlined in black are the MLRAs. And up until the current guiding policy, it was still based upon this factorial approach to where any given resource area, particular MLRAs, was based upon physiography, geology, climate, water, soils, biological resources, and land use. Here's an example of the legend of LRRD and MLRAs, which are numeric. The 2006 product kept this factorial approach, but instead of being these different properties defining individual resource areas, it was actually more a query. Like we had this GIS layer, and we described each resource area based upon these other properties. One of the things that we tried to push through was concentrate on the scale-dependent covariates, to where resource areas at this large scale are based more upon climate zones versus at the finer scales where it's more topography or geology influenced. And this is an example within the literature. If you're interested in the discipline of soil geography, there's a real fascinating article put out by Miller and Schatzel this year that looked at the context of scale in soil geography. And I have a couple examples. So when I say small cartographic scale, I'm talking about large analysis scale, maps of 1 to 1 million. Very general. This was a Dokachev map that looked at carbon across an area in Russia, the isohumus belts. And you couldn't necessarily identify geology. At these very coarse scales, they were more climate zones. But soil resources can actually be picked out very easily to identify resources. But it's not, it ignores those local differences. It's sort of a general broad. And this is based also on cartographic standards. You can't identify every little feature. The medium cartographic scales of the 1 to 1 million to 1 to 25,000 is a deductive approach. Here's an example from Wisconsin where it was more parent material at this range. But within the legend, it was also texture or color modifiers of that parent material. And the detailed soil maps that most of us are familiar are more tied to aerial photography or catena sequences, repeating pattern across hill slopes and topography. And this is the case within a lot of the digital soil mapping where they use topographic wetness indexes, and that's usually the main feature that identifies soils across landscapes. To reiterate that difference between analysis scale and cartographic scale, because that's not always intuitive when people talk about scale, we've created this sort of synthesis figure where climate zones represent these large areas down to topography at the fine. And that really led into this particular model that we're using as a guiding principle with how we define resource units. And this is very similar to the Forest Service's approach to where climate represents these large scales or small cartographic scales. Then as you zoom into an area, geology, landform, topography, and eventually soil, vegetation, and dynamics are kind of the guiding covariate representing each resource. I want to talk about the upper tiers of the hierarchy, the land resource region and the major land resource areas, with sort of this idea that at this coarsest scale, they should be based upon climate. This is a false color composite of bioclime, which is used with species distribution modeling, but it's a number of variables that if you were to do a multivariate analysis of it, you have these different climate zones that pop. And the current LRR product of the agency is based more upon these agricultural markets. As I mentioned earlier, it was an aggregation of these soils represented in these different zones. And what we're proposing is more a climate approach to create that holistic approach to resource classification. And going with that idea of looking at the wholes and the parts, once you look at geology and divide into units, you have to look at that minus one scale. And it's an iterative process that's ongoing. It's obviously been ongoing since the 30s. And what we're trying to do is base it upon these principles to help move the product forward where there's so many different competing ideas and biases from people who look at particular areas. We're trying to develop the theory. And once we agree on the theory, then we could build a product. I want to mention real quick that this was part of a special issue of Rangelands that looks at generalized ecological site groups. It's an issue that's coming out in December to where we're trying to build concepts around these groups at landscape scale management versus ecological sites. So based upon that issue and some of the case studies that have came out, the ecological site groups are based more on geomorphic modifiers, whereas if you're familiar with ecological sites, they're based more on texture modifiers, which compares more favorably to the component or the detailed soils map versus your land unit or general soils map. So parting thoughts, that issue comes out in December. I encourage you to look it up or contact me. Looking through this project, the land resource hierarchy must have better connectivity among scales. We're really good at the fine scale or the large cartographic scale of detailed soil maps, but they don't have very good relationships to those larger scale units, the more climate domain processes. Usually the question we get when I show a model like that, these variables can diverge drastically when these fine-scale drivers overwhelm larger-scale processes. One example in arid systems, when you have development of a caliche or a petrocalcic horizon, the water regime is essentially altered, and you can't count on these systems behaving in these climatic zones when those fine-scale water regimes overwhelm those processes. Another example would be topography. Elevation. But I wanted to leave with this idea that these maps and resource areas are essentially hypotheses. They'll continually be tested, and it's an iterative process as we go forward as there's more ideas and technology available. So with that, I'll take some questions.
Let's give it. Do we have time for a question or two?
No. The theory is at those local scales with aspect, it's the hill slope or elevation that modifies that macro climate. So although climate is very important when you reach those finer scale processes, it's a covariate to where topography is what you're basing it upon. You're measuring climate such as precipitation, temperature. But when you're building these relationships and detailed soil maps, It's more the topography that you're basing it upon, or geology. We can't put soil pits everywhere. So at some level, it's an abstraction or a generalization. And it does have those connectivity among scales, but they're essentially conceptual models that we're building.
Since we're bumping into the break, we can keep you up here, and I think...
As long as it's not the whole 20 minutes of questions.
No, we won't. Go ahead with your question, and the other speakers are...
We've talked about this before, and land use is one of the things that we've tried to take out, but that's one of those exceptions to where it could overwhelm the larger or finer scale processes. And because this product is inherently an agricultural product based upon these market zones, I would find it difficult to completely remove that from the equation. But it is one of those things that there's been a lot of debate on.
In ecological cycles, or generalized ecological cycles, will those that depict repeating patterns on the landscape at the scale that they have to be aggregated to ecological cycles?
In a number of the case studies in the December issue, yes. There's a number of approaches. None of them are the same. And it's very similar in 2009, there was a very similar special issue that outlined some ecological site concepts. And one thing we've noticed in different regions, how they group these areas is quite different. In the Colorado Plateau, they took a more holistic approach to try to keep it as simple as possible, to like what are, you know, the most significant 8 units. In, I think, the Northeast, they took more of a geologic approach with one, you know, particular example. Same thing, I think, in Southern California. There's another case study that looked at geology as the template. But it also has another concept, which is a generalized state and transition model that Brandon Bestelmeyer at the Hornot Experimental Range has worked with some concepts on that. If you're not familiar with ecological sites, they have vegetation dynamics associated with it, where you're trying to reach a desired state, and there's pathways associated with that to move to a different state. And what we've noticed when we look at these relationships, even though, you know, there may be 20 different ecological sites, they all have the exact same state and transition model. So that's one method that they were using to generalize this across the landscape.
Thank you, Sean.